Okay. This cycle, we've had several of these cycles, as those of you... someone just joined?
Yes, George Lewis from APRI in Pittsburgh.
Constanza Hazelwood.
Okay. And where are you from?
Northwestern Michigan College in Traverse City, Michigan.
Great. Okay. We may get a few more people coming in on the call, but we'll interrupt and let them join us. As I was saying, these professional learning community calls, we hold them every 2 weeks. This is the first call of this new cycle. They'll be going... next one will be on the 24th. They're always the same time, same place, same phone number. You'll probably be getting an email announcements, and we send post-session notes in the next couple days to everyone, and then reminders before the next one. Anyone who wants to be taken off the list, they can just respond, or if they know someone who they want to put on the list, just forward the email to them and have them just email us their contact information, and we'll make sure they're on the list. These calls are facilitated by HMTRI, which Glow and I are both associated with. We have a cooperative agreement. Someone just joined?
Sarah Ashbrook. Debbie Wiesen.
Okay. And who are you with?
Debbie Wiesen, New England Center for Homeless Veterans.
Okay, great. Anyone else? We work with the Environmental Protection Agency, and our mission is basically to help communities get programs started, getting these environmental workforce development programs, getting them started, either with EPA funding or even without EPA funding. Once they get EPA funding, our mission for them is to try to help them with hints and try to give them as much assistance as we can in terms of making their program a better program. And the way we do that, Glo will talk about in a second. Another way we do it is with these professional learning community calls, where we try to share ideas, things that work, things that don't work, and helpful hints. So we target three groups. We target new grantees, and congratulations to those of you who are new grantees. We had 16 of them this time, which was the most we've ever had. The funding, I'm pleased to announce, and in a time of decreased funding in federal programs, the funding for this was increased from $2 million to $3.2 million, and it allowed for, instead of having 10 grantees, it allowed to have 16 grantees. So we have the most grantees that we've ever had. So congratulations to you who went through the process. Our objective for those of you who are new to the program or have re-upped is to try to exchange ideas with other grantees for helpful hints on what we call landmines, things that might cause you problems or solution to issues you might have, what people are doing in terms of their testing and recruiting and that type of thing. For those of you who are well-seasoned grantees, it's a time for us to get together and a chance for you to mentor other individuals who are either hoping to be grantees or our new grantees, and your experience is going to be incredibly valuable. And then, of course, the third group are those of you who currently do not have EPA funding. You may be thinking of starting a program in your community, some sort of a job training program. You're not there yet. You're trying to decide whether it's feasible, and if you do, what's involved and how you go about it. And for those of you who are in that situation, Our calls, which will be twice a month, every 2 weeks, will extend through November in this cycle, and then we'll have another cycle. We go through, during that time, we usually hit on all of the major points. Usually when we get near the grant writing time when the RFPs have been announced, we will provide some helpful hints and share ideas among people. And I'm pleased to announce that of the 16 grantees who were accepted, 12 of them were PLC members. So it was definitely a plus to be on some of these calls, to be involved with connecting with other individuals who have a lot of experience doing this. So there's, of course, no cost to this. We don't speak for EPA. We're close to EPA. We've worked with the program since it started. I'm a former EPA person. We've worked on this program since 1990, so we're very familiar with it and what's going on in Washington, and we'll pass along those ideas, and anything we hear, we'll give you whatever information we find. So today's agenda, as I said earlier, this cycle we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk to people who have been there, done that, and are going to act as mentors and tell us about their program, how they get started, what their problems were like, and give you all a chance to ask some questions. Before we get started, though, we start every session with what's happening in Washington and get some news from GLO that finds out what's happening with the environmental job training program. So, GLO, do you want to give us a rundown of what's going on?
Yeah, sure. The rundown this week is very short, though, because my project officer at EPA headquarters is on vacation. In fact, I think he's in Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very nice. So I haven't talked to him for a couple weeks. I probably won't talk to him for another week or so. But like Mike said, usually I've got some kind of an update that I've been given from headquarters. This time I do not. But I do want to mention one thing about these PLC calls. When we have a lot of people, especially on the line like we do today, sometimes it's difficult to hear if people have speaker phones on because we get all that background noise. So as we go through these calls, if you could either keep your phone muted unless you want to say something, that would be very, very helpful. The other thing that I think Mike wanted me to talk about is our annual grantee meeting that we hold in the fall. This year's meeting is going to be September 18th and 19th. And what this is a gathering of all EPA-funded grantees, whether they're currently working on EPA dollars or whether they have worked on EPA dollars in the past. It is a place where all these grantees and their project officers from all 10 EPA regions and headquarters staff come together to share ideas, learn from each other, and like Mike said, just help everybody develop the best program that they can. The grantees themselves actually give me the topics for the agenda, and then the agenda is built in completely around what everybody wants to talk about. So it's not Mike and I coming up with these topics, it's the grantees. They want to talk about curriculum. They want to talk about partnering, how to work with your community, how to work with employers, marketing, resources, all kinds of things, recruitment, screenings. Recruitment would include both students and the trainers. Retention, tracking, dealing with special populations, all the issues that a grantee would have to deal with when they're developing a job training program, we talk about at this meeting. And it's a place for the grantees to get together and share ideas on all of these topics. PLC members that remain active are also invited to come to this meeting so that they can then, too, learn from the grantees that are doing the work. Mike, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I think it's a great opportunity for those of you who are not grantees or have not received federal funding to see if this is something you may want to try. And what I would do if I was in a community that I'm thinking of or someone has told me that I need to look at this, listen to some of these calls and some of the presenters and see if it's something that you think you can do. And if you think, yeah, I'd like to go for it, go to the next step, and you may want to come to the annual meeting and talk to the actual grantees and get a feel for it, and And as I think you're going to find out through these calls, this is a difficult business, and it's tough, but it's very rewarding. So I think with that, we would like to get started, and we do try to keep these around 30 minutes calls, so it doesn't take a long time out of each day. Why don't we go on to the next agenda item, which will be our very first grantee. And I picked Graham then, and then they resubmitted and received federal funding in 2006, and then they received it in 2008, and then 2009, and then they got another grant in 2011, and then they were just funded this year for another three-year grant. And this is a really exemplary. When we first started this program, the EPA people told me we really don't want to fund anyone more than once because we want to spread the funding, the small amount of funding we have. But I think they realized that we've got to take our best programs and we have to support them. And the group I'm talking about is a partnership between the City of Tacoma, Peter Guzman, and Christine Campbell from Clover Park Technical College. And Peter was going to work with Christina today and talk to you, but I think he wasn't able to make it. But with that, Christine, I'm going to turn this over to you. And what we like to do is have an open conversation so that if Christine says something and you really want to talk about it, don't feel bad about interrupting and just saying, you know, could you elaborate on that or can you tell us a little bit more about that? So, Christine, you're there?
I'm here.
Great.
And Peter sends his apologies. He had planned to be part of this but got co-opted to do another presentation down in Olympia at the last minute. So otherwise he would have been here. And Peter is our fiscal manager for the grant. He works for the City of Tacoma. He oversees all of the operations and makes sure that all of us are in compliance with what we're supposed to be doing in terms of the grant. We also have two other partners besides the City of Tacoma and the college. We have Metropolitan Development Council, which is a large not-for-profit here in the Puget Sound area. We're located out on the West Coast, by the way, in the Seattle-Tacoma area, right along Puget Sound. And Metropolitan Development Council has their fingers in a lot of community activities. They are very involved in helping people with homelessness and drug alcohol rehabilitation, achieving employment, gaining skills in various areas. And they, in turn, have connections all over the region with other not-for-profit organizations that can bring a lot to the table and have worked pretty closely with us thus far. And our fourth partner, full partner, is our Workforce Development Council here. It's called Workforce Central. And they do the bulk of the work helping us with the employer connections and job placement, things like that. Each of us brings additional leveraged assets, if you will, to the table in the partnership. So I think when Peter and I were talking about this upcoming call, one of the great strengths that we both feel we have here that has helped us be successful is the strength of our partnership. So I guess that's one thing if I could share with anything in super important with new grantees or those hoping to become grantees is the tremendous importance of developing strong partnerships throughout your region and as well as your close community. And you can just find so many additional assets and support services for your students doing that. So we've been very blessed in that respect because each of us in turn have a lot of connections outside in the community at various levels to bring all of those to share. City of Tacoma, also the City of Tacoma, the Palo Alto County Health Department has an assessment grant, which has helped us get a good handle on what some of the folks doing actual remediation and cleanup are looking for. And again, that has kind of helped shape our curriculum. The partnership leveraging, as I say, has been terrific. We have leveraged services in terms of training for job search, job interviewing skills, resume and portfolio preparation, and as well as actual setting up, Workforce Central sets up internships for us with not-for-profits and for-profits for some of our graduates. The college has a lot of connections with industry and business in the area that are connected to advisory councils for our various programs, so that's helped a lot, helped open a lot of doors for interviews for our graduates. And the city, of course, has a lot of connections with various employers and other community-based organizations. So again, I'll stop with the partnership stuff, but that has been just super important for us as far as success.
So you would say that anyone getting started, the most important thing, you have such a breadth of partnering. It's incredible. And it sounds like this is one of the most important things that you found in getting your program going and sustaining.
Right. That Peter and I both felt that was a one of the top strengths that we have. Each and all of our partner, in addition to having the partnerships, the primary partnerships, each of us individual partners have partnerships and connections with organizations and employers in that throughout the community and the region, and so we can bring those to the table also. Additionally, we all work really well together, and that is a big blessing, and I know that that does not always happen. You know, I know that sometimes you can be in a partnership relationship with various entities, and whether it's somebody not pulling their fair share of the weight or somebody being difficult to deal with or whatever, I know that the partnerships don't always work in a highly committed and collaborative manner, and we have been really blessed with that. And I don't have a formula for that. We were just lucky that there's a whole bunch of us involved that really care about this program and about getting our unemployed people in the region back to work in general.
You chose the city to be the fiscal agent, didn't you? Was there a reason for that?
Well, the city actually chose us. The city, our health department had assessment and I think a cleanup grant at some point. I'm a little hazy on that, but the city wanted to go after the training grant. The city chose Clover Park as the training partner, the college partner, because we have an environmental science 2-year degree program here. And so back in the early days when this got started, that was the reason for it. Through all these years, we've built a really strong connection and partnership beyond just that. But that's how that got started. They chose Metropolitan Development Council, again, because they are a very strong not-for-profit here in the area, working with the very populations that we're trying to recruit and help get employed. And they in turn have connections with a lot of other not-for-profits that have helped out tremendously. And then our Workforce Development Council, they're pretty much involved in almost everything we do on a grant level. And they are terrific because they get all the WIA funding in the area. That all runs through them. And so they bring a lot of leveraged resources to the table using WIA funds, Workforce Investment Act funds, to our participants. So I know that this grant that we have now, and I think the last one we had, allowed for some transportation costs to be paid. But prior to that, the grants did not allow for that. And the Workforce Investment Act funds did. And plus, for people that are eligible and qualify, they'll help with childcare. They just help with work clothing, tools, a lot of things. So I guess, you know, if entities do not have their workforce board or their workforce council in their area as an actual partner, I would recommend developing a really close working relationship with them, because that's where the Workforce Investment Acts funnel into your region, and you can get a lot of leverage resources through them. As far as curriculum development, our employers have been tremendous. That's been a challenge, that and having, you know, finding qualified instructors have occasionally been a challenge. We've been lucky. We've had our lead instructor for this is very dedicated, and he's been doing it with us for years. But we have some little pieces that he doesn't teach, and it's often very difficult to find a qualified subject matter expert who's also a good teacher and can transmit that knowledge effectively, who's willing to take little short bits of training. You know, a lot of folks that want to teach, they want longer-term contracts and a more regular source of income. So we just have to keep searching out, using our advisory boards and employers to try and find people to fill in the gaps where we need them. As far as curriculum development, recruiting, I think the other folks that have been repeat grantees will say that recruiting is one of the primary important functions or actions that you do up front that will help you succeed with employment outcomes at the back when everybody graduates. And we're still playing with that. There's no easy answer to it. We've gone back and forth and changed our CASA score requirements. We now require a 10th grade level on reading. And when we had a chemistry component that was a little more complex than the one we have now, we required 10th grade on math also. We've lowered that a little bit because we don't teach to that level in chemistry anymore, but because our curriculum has evolved right along with some of the other things. But recruiting, finding people that are going to stay committed, go the course, and then go out and get a job afterwards is a big challenge, and we constantly are working with it, constantly improving. Our Workforce Development Board is going to assist us down the line. We've been talking with them, and they are going to provide some in-kind leverage services to us, running a one-week boot camp, if you will, prior to our actually starting the technical training, to find out who it is that's not showing up or showing up late or, you know, sits around and tries to sneak looks at their smartphone instead of paying attention in class, that type of thing, try to weed out some of the ones that aren't as committed. So we've got that coming up as a new element. And otherwise, we just keep trying to schedule events and things that they have to show up to, and doing one-on-one talks and interviews with them, trying to whittle down till we get some folks that are really committed and want to go to work. So I don't have an easy answer for recruiting questions. I'll share anything I know that we do, but there's plenty of room for improvement there. I don't know.
Clearly, recruitment is key in all of these programs, and all of the successful grantees say they spend a lot of time and effort on recruiting, and the idea is that you've got a very limited resource, and if someone comes in and takes up one of those seats, that means someone else in the community is not going to get that seat. And so one of the hardest jobs is finding the most deserving people to fill those seats, but also those who are most likely to succeed in your program that you've designed. And it sounds like you are spending a lot of effort to do this, Christine.
We are, and we spend a lot of time talking about it and a lot of time brainstorming. How can we do it better? What can we do that will, you know, attract the kind of people that we're looking for? One of the things we've done, because, and I know everybody does not have this in their backyard, but, you know, we've got Joint Base Lewis-McChord here. Then we also have the Naval Yard across the Sound over in Bremerton. So we have a lot of military being transitioned out in our area that are looking for jobs. And so quite a few of our recruits, as we're going along, we're seeing more and more transitioning military coming in. And we found that they are really a terrific addition to the class, just the class personality and operation as a whole. They tend to be more disciplined. They're used to, you know, following directions. They're used to showing up when they're supposed to be somewhere, doing what they're supposed to do. And so when we have three of the vets in our class, it seems to kind of change the classroom dynamic in a good way. And so we've been outreaching quite a bit to the bases to transition the military. Obviously, all of them don't want to go into hazardous waste remediation or hazardous waste handling or whatever, but enough of them do. And there are jobs on the base that require these credentials. So, and I should mention, too, if folks aren't connected, I don't know, it depends on, let me back up, depending on what the components in your curriculum are, some of the labor unions will give credit toward their apprenticeship programs toward journeyman status for some of the hours that folks put in the program achieving certain widely recognized credentials like the OSHA 10 safety or the HAZWOPR 40 and some of those forklift certifications, some of those things. So your laborers union and some of the others give credit if somebody wants to go into that type of work. They give credit for these components in their apprenticeship program. At least the ones out here do. I don't know. Nationwide, I don't know if that would be the case, but you could certainly talk to the union apprenticeship coordinator for whatever unions are active in your area and, you know, try to work that out, try to work out that reciprocity.
I remember in the last PLC cycle, one of the things that stuck with me that you mentioned, and it relates to recruitment, and it relates to partnering with the WIB or the WIA, and it relates to your servicing your participants. Everyone who came through your program, you mentioned, you checked to make sure if they can be WIA certified. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, we have, again, our Workforce Investment Board, or in some places call it Workforce Investment Council. Here in our area, it's called Workforce Central, but it's the same entity. And they're one of our partners, and they are a strong partner. So we have one of their representatives is assigned to our program as our liaison with their support services and employment services and all of that. So we have our one point connection there that our students can work with. That individual comes to our class right at the beginning of class. We do a registration day before class actually starts because we've got all this college paperwork they have to fill out and a whole lot of other stuff. So we get all that out of the way, answer all their questions, take them on their tour of the college so they know where things are and know where their classrooms are and stuff. And we have that our workforce assessment board person come, and he actually brings the WIA application packages, and we have people fill those out so that we try and ensure that everyone who is eligible for these Workforce Investment Act leverage services get their application in and are processed and have an opportunity to avail themselves of it. Everyone doesn't qualify, but for the folks who do, it's really, really, really helpful.
I was surprised to find out how few grantees actually screen all of theirs to see if they're really qualified, because if you are, it opens a whole bunch of benefits, including work boots, additional training, all kinds of benefits.
They will pay for further training. Like, you know, obviously our budgets only go so far. So if somebody wants some additional trainings, they can go to an outside trainer or a private trainer. Sometimes if I don't know if this is a Workforce Investment Act requirement or just a requirement of our board here. They have to have a good job prospect in the works before they go pay for extra training. But let's say Aerotech tells somebody, well, if you have this credential with everything else you have, if you added this credential, we would hire you. Then they'll, if they qualify for the WEA and they've been approved, they'll pay for that extra training for them, and it's like an automatic job placement for you. So, yeah, when we started out, we told people about it. You know, they'd come into the program, we'd explain to them what that was about and what they could expect to receive if they qualified. But we kind of left it up to them, told them where to go and process their papers and all that. Well, that didn't work out real well because most of them just didn't do it. So we just worked that into our whole registration process. It's all part of our intake and final registration that everybody fills out that application package.
Excellent.
We have a pretty good relationship with our board as well. Our issue, though, is they've gone to work first. So the training dollars are, at this point, non-existent.
Oh.
And that's made a really big impact.
Yeah, it would. It would.
Wow. Yeah. Is any ideas or any work around that?
Not yet. We're trying to think of a way, but at this point we haven't come up with anything.
So they're only allocating Workforce Investment Act funds to people that are TANF?
Well, what they're doing is they've set up a series of workshops, which helps us because we can use those workshops that help with resume writing, interviewing techniques, computer skills. So their money's being paid to push people to look for jobs and obtain jobs first. Then anything left over will go towards training dollars. But what's been left over has the July allocation's already been used. There's nothing there. And we now have to wait till September or November to see if there's any training dollars available.
Huh. Okay, well, so I guess ours in our area has gone almost 180 the other direction. They not only, you know, work with us and with our Department of Labor grants that we have here at the college. They're very involved with us in those too. But they fund special cohorts for special trainings. Like I'm getting two of them started here at the end of the summer now, where this training that's not readily available out there, short term, and has immediate potential for employment. And then they also fund what they call individual training accounts. So
right, ITAs.
ITAs. So most of their money is going for that, for training here. So it must have something to do with either the local, regional, or even state philosophy of your organization.
Wake Forest Investment Boards are very autonomous, and every state, and in talking to people at the Association of Workforce Investment Boards, they say, we have our stars and we have our rocks, and some of them are great, and some of them are really difficult to work with. But I think the takeaway that both of you have said is, whatever you do, you need to get involved with them one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They may be non-functional, but at least you need to find that out.
That's why we all train in working with difficult people, isn't it? Because
that's right.
in our job. Yeah, as grant administrators, you have to have those partnerships all over your area, and so it doesn't matter what the other person is like.
Right.
It's our job to learn to work effectively with them.
That's right. Anyone out there have questions of Christine? And I'm hoping she'll be on our calls in future PLC sessions. Our next one's going to be on the 24th of July, and we'll be discussing a lot of these issues in more detail. Christine, is it okay if we put your contact information on the post-session notes?
Sure. I didn't get all into our curriculum and stuff here because, you know, that's kind of individual depending on where people are located and what they've got going on in their area. So, you know, some of the things we do might not even be relevant to what some of the other folks are doing. So I didn't figure we'd spend a lot of time on that.
Christine, I do have one question. This is Steve Schaefer with the Arkansas Construction Education Foundation. We're in our first year of the grant, and we have had one training round thus far, and everything went great up until the time that we graduated, that was in mid-February, and there wasn't much work going on at that time.
Okay.
And we eventually placed half of the graduates. This group is largely a group of homeless individuals, and after placing some of them, it was very difficult to get a hold of the rest of them, you know, and track them. So any tricks of the trade in tracking people that, you know, are pretty transient?
that is a thorn in everybody's side, and ours as well as other past grantees. It's actually a thorn in our side for all of our programs. There's no easy answer to that. They just drop off the map. Their phone numbers don't work anymore. Their emails don't work. If they ever had an email, don't work anymore. One of the things that we try and do, not only with our EPA folks, trainees, but with all of our special classes and special cohorts, is get that we have in this area, and again, I don't know what you have available as far as resources back there. We have a system here in Pierce County where people can get an email address that's through the county. And so they don't have to have their own computer. They could just go to a library or something, and also a telephone number. So if they're trying to get jobs or something like that, and it doesn't cost them anything, it's like a message telephone number that they'll assign them and an email address, and we encourage all of them to get connected to that because it doesn't cost them any money, and like on an email or something, they can access it from anywhere. If they're trying to get their messages, a lot of the community-based organizations will let them use their telephones, or they can even borrow a cell phone from somebody and access their message system. So that's one of the ways we've tried to stay in touch. But over time, we lose a percentage of them, too. They just disappear.
It's a tough thing. Some of the strategies that grantees have used is, one, try to offer some free refresher courses, even though they're not intensive, just a chance for them, schedule them before they graduate so that if they come back, there's an incentive to come back and have a little one-day refresher or an awareness course, placement service, ability to come back and utilize placement service, and perhaps also alumni nights. You know, all they're little strategies, but sometimes cumulatively it helps in the margins to keep touch with some of the people.
We're working with our college right now. We have what's called Hawkmail, which is an email address, and we're getting all of our workforce development people an email address through that will be theirs for as long as they're around.
Excellent.
You know, that sounds like the same sort of system we have here, too, yeah.
Thank you.
It just, you have to, again, I don't want to keep beating the drum, but you have to really establish a lot of connections throughout your region and develop good working relationships with all these folks, because there could be a really great service 2 miles away from you, and if you don't know about it, it's not going to do you any good, you know, for your folks. So we're constantly finding out about new programs or new services that we didn't even know existed, and we've been doing this for years. So it's just a matter of staying in touch with
we
everything that's going on out there in your community and taking advantage of what's available.
We sponsored a workshop in Charlotte, and we had 3 people from a particular county come, and they didn't even know that each other existed. And they met at the workshop, and this is such an important thing. This whole networking issue is tough. And for new grantees, both new grantees and grantees that are thinking of organizing, it's hard to emphasize as much as what you need to just start scouring, finding out who the players are formally and informally. I think Christine did a really good job of the key players. You got to have a trainer. You got to have a fiscal agent. You got to have a recruiter placement person, but then you've got all these ancillary organizations that are formal and informal. There might be church people, non-governmental organizations that are out there that you're going to have to network, and they come in on the periphery, but they're equally as important.
Churches are really important in this area, and again, I imagine that's somewhat regional, but we have associated ministries here, which a huge number of churches of many different denominations have belonged to and have representatives. So being involved with them and getting our information out, whatever that information may be, disseminated through their members is huge, because I mean, imagine how much time it would take if we had to go to every church in our region to try to establish a relationship. I mean, it's just not time effective. And so we do have these various religious, associations or groups that different, it can be all one denomination, or in this case, this particular one is a multi-denominational, but we get a lot of information disseminated at no cost through using their networking.
Excellent. Well, we're going to be talking about these issues in additional PLCs, and Christine, I really want to thank you for telling us about your program, and hopefully we'll be coming back to this program when we discuss some of the other programs. So with that, and if anyone has any questions, we can bring it up, just email me or GLOW, and we'll get them out there and get answers, and we'll be talking about them in the next PLC on the 24th. So we try to keep these around 30 minutes. So with that, again, thank you again for the call, and hopefully we'll see you all in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Center.
Hello, Tanner. This is Constanza. I'm calling on Wednesday. It's about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. If you could please reply on email or give me a call back. I have been contacted by human resources, and there's one last hoop to jump with your contract, and it is to get your reference list. You did list some of your former employers, but there are no contact numbers or people. So if you could please send me two or three numbers and people, contact people, so I can go ahead and make your phone calls, that would be great, and we should be able to do that this evening. So depending on your response. I also have your list. Thanks for putting that together, and I'm in the process of expediting those purchases as well. Thank you. Bye-bye. Oh. Hello? Oh, this is Tanner. Hi. How are you? I'm well. How are you? What happened? Well, where were you? What did you do? Yeah, you're right. Well, listen, I wanted to touch base with you. One, to thank you for the list, and I'm gonna be looking at that. Sometime soon we should be getting some of those materials. So that's very helpful to have that now. Tomorrow I'm gonna have a meeting with Chip from the Cherry Capital Foods. And I've been looking at their machines. They are very close to starting putting the plants into their hydroponic system indoors. And yeah, and they want someone to start looking at how to monitor what kind of variables to take into account. They're going to be doing lettuce, and they already have the LED purchase. So the idea is to monitor the system with the existing conditions that they have already placed. So it would be more like setting up monitors and sensors. All that kind of thing. Can I put you on hold just a sec? Just a second. Hello? Yeah, he's on there. I see you right now. Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're even thinking of setting something up remotely so people don't even have to be on site to do your reading. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's what they are thinking. They might set up a web page. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of the conversation. What the purpose of tomorrow is really to get a better sense of their needs in the logistical details of how they would like to involve an intern from LNC and what are some opportunities for our students. So I just wanted to check with you your availability, if they were able to bring you in, and what are your thoughts in terms of employment opportunities? What are you looking for? So I can communicate that to them, and then we will bring you in to the next meeting. Okay, so you're still available for something like this, and it's still of interest to you to go check it out. Excellent. Well, thank you. And I will try. My priority would be to make sure they understand that you bring a high level of expertise so you get some compensation, as opposed to someone who's coming as community service, which would be the case for the other intern. So we need all kinds of people. And, give you an update on Friday. Probably I can tell you more about the details. But if you want to stop maybe next week, see how you're feeling and, yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay, and then one more thing I need from you is a list of 2 or 3 references with phone numbers and names so I can contact them before I leave. And that's the last hoop we need to jump before they get your contact altogether. Okay, so if you could email that, maybe that would be the easiest. Instead of waiting until you come in.
Great. Okay. You're welcome. You feel better. Bye-bye.
Mary here, hello. Okay. How are you? Oh, did you finish your roof? Good.
Really? But you could put it in a cloud, though. If you... Well, it sounds like you have a handle on everything anyway. But you sound like, yeah, you're on top of the world. Let me just tell you a story that is going to make you laugh. But I was thinking of the lunch on Sunday, and I called. Thank you. Thank you. Donna Palmer, please. Okay. Hello. Things are quiet.
Walking around seems that way.
Yeah. Compared to last week?
Julie Ryan called about the calibration reagents.
Mm-hmm.
Had you found anything out? Did they have them?
The chemicals are here.
Here in the lab?
I'm pretty sure they are.
Oh, okay.
That's what I heard last, but they were here.
Gee,
I'm just trying to think what else, what else, other piece of information does she need? Does she need to know what's here?
Well, she just wondered if, she just left me a message. They want to use the boat on the 22nd. She wondered if there still was not those calibration chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And so she wanted to come in and do the calibration, but if the chemicals are here, so
want me to do that?
Well, I just want to see if there, he left a message there, which I hadn't read, but...
Okay.
Let me see if I find that.
Okay. Okay. Hello.
I'm doing well. What about you? Okay, so if you give me his number, I don't think I have it here. Okay. 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 Okay, so I'll call him. Thank you. You too. Enjoy your trip north. It's nice here. You should, when you get here, the sky should be clear and really nice. Okay. Bye. Oh my God, chicken.
has conductivity, she has a pH, and she has a turbidity. It's all documented and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'll hopefully. And then she wants to get in here on Sunday to do the calibration.
Do you want me to come open the door for her?
If you can, if you're available.
Yeah, or we could also call security and let them know.
Yeah, right. That would be the other thing. So.
Either way, what time?
Let me call her.
Okay.
Hi, Julie Hans, and sort of on page. So I'm letting you know that the chemicals for the hydro lab are over there, and they are in fact here. I have conductivity, pH, and turbidity. So I believe that that we're all set there, and so that's no problem. I will check on the 22nd for the boat, or the 29th as a backup, just to make sure that we have a captain who's available. So I think that either one of those dates should work okay. And then lastly, we'll be able to get you in Sunday, whether it's a calling security to make sure the doors are unlocked or some meeting. So that shouldn't be a problem. So give me a ring. Office number is 231-995-1793. Call Keith Fortin. Hey Keith, how are you? Hey, checking on another date for a Western cruise. Wanted to see what your schedule. All right. Pulling the car over? You can't look at your... You gotta walk in the door with it ready. Alright. Monday the 22nd. Okay, is that conflict with your jury summons? Right. Oh, okay. Usually they schedule those about 3 weeks in advance, the trials, if you're selected. So, at least that's my last experience, and Lara's too. Choice. The 29th was the second choice. Okay. So the 22nd is a good day for you. Okay. I'll let them know. Kind of a, I think the class starts at 9 or 10. And goes till 4 or 5. Kind of a day during the day, all day thing. Yeah. 10 to 5 or Bowley's dock at 10 or yeah. I'll I'll firm that up for you. I just left a message with her saying I would check with you about the dates, but that's good to know. So that was her first choice. That was the date they really wanted. So that works out well. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Yep, absolutely. Get it in. Yep, we'll get it paid right away. Okay, thanks, Keith. Hans Van Summer at Northwest Christian College. Hey, not too bad. I just was reading the instructions for the arrival. I just wanted to check in with you regarding setup and teardown, if there's any flexibility on those dates that you, certain times that you specified. Well, I don't think that we would have our booth set up till 11:30 on Saturday night sometime in the evening or in the late afternoon. I guess I don't know what the traffic's going to be like or how it's being, are people, what is happening in the evening or the dinner time and those kind of things.